जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपीजना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुनातीरावनचारी यमुनातीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जनवल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदनंदन व्रज जनरंजन यमुनातीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन भज जनरंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद हिस्ट डिवाइन ग्रेस ए सी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग कैन आई आस्क समवन टू ओपन द विंडोज एंड समवन एल्स टू टर्न ऑफ दोज बिग लाइट्स एट द एंड्स ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 29 टॉक्स बिटवीन नारद एंड किंग प्राचीन बरही टेक्स्ट 32 दुखेषु एकतरेणापि दैवभूतात्महेतुषु जीवस्य न व्यवच्छेद स्याच्चेत्तत्तत्प्रतिक्रिया दुःखेषु एकतरेणापि दैवभूतात्महेतुषु जीवस्य न व्यवच्छेद स्याच्चेत्तत्तत्प्रतिक्रिया दुःखेषु एकतरेणापि दैवभूतात्महेतुषु जीवस्य न व्यवच्छेद स्याच्चेत्तत्तत्प्रतिक्रिया Ladies, please. Dukheshu, in the matter of distress, ekatarena, from one kind, api, even, daiva, providence, bhuta, other living entities, atma, the body and mind, hetushu, on account of, jivasya, of the living entity, Na, never, vyavacheda, stopping, syat, is possible, chet, although, tat tat, of those miseries, Pratikriya, counteraction. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The living entities are trying to counteract different miserable conditions pertaining to providence, other living entities, or the body and mind. Still, they must remain conditioned by the laws of nature, despite all attempts to counter these laws. Purport. Just as a dog wanders here and there for a piece of bread or punishment, the living entity perpetually wanders about trying to be happy and planning in so many ways to counteract material misery. This is called the struggle for existence. We can actually see in our daily lives how we are forced to make plans to drive away miserable conditions. To get rid of one miserable condition, we have to put ourselves in another kind of miserable condition. A poor man suffers for want of money, but if he wants to become rich, he has to struggle in so many ways. Actually, that is not a valid counteracting process, but a snare of the illusory energy. If one does not endeavor to counteract his situation, but is satisfied with his position, knowing that he has obtained his position through past activities, he can instead engage his energy to develop Krishna consciousness. This is recommended in all Vedic literature.
Tasyaiva heto prayate tako vido nalabhyate yad bhramatam uparyadaha tallabhate dukhavad anyata sukham kale na sarvatra gabhira ramhasa.
Quote, persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet, Brahmaloka, down to the lowest planet, Patala. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in course of time, just as in course of time we obtain miseries, although we do not desire them. End quote. Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 5th Chapter, Text 18. One should simply try to develop his Krishna consciousness and not waste his time trying to improve his material condition. Actually, the material condition cannot be improved. The process of improvement means accepting another miserable condition. However, if we endeavor to improve our Krishna consciousness, the distress of material life will disappear without extraneous endeavor. Krishna therefore promises, Kaunteya pratijanehi na me bhaktav pranashyati. O son of Kunti, declare it boldly that my devotee never perishes. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 31. One who takes to the path of devotional service will never be vanquished, despite all miseries of the body and mind, and despite all misery brought about by other living entities and providence, miseries which are beyond our control.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
One time a world religions person came to meet Srila Prabhupada on behalf of the person who was organizing a world religion conference. And the invitation to Srila Prabhupada was to come and speak at that conference. So Srila Prabhupada asked, what is the purpose of this conference? Swamiji, We would like to invite big leaders, spiritual leaders, religious leaders, so we can discuss and inspire people how to make this world a better place to live in. And Prabhupada chuckled and said, how can you make this world a better place to live in? Krishna says, Dukkhalayam Ashashvatam. This place was designed for misery. How can you make this place free of misery? And then Prabhupada explained that in the house, the bathroom is designed for a particular purpose. It has a specific function. That is the place where you relieve yourself and you come out. What is the meaning of making a bathroom a very comfortable place? If you lay nice carpet, nice music, fragrances, make it your bedroom, will it be able to, is that a place that you can relax? Is that a place that you can call it another room, although we call it another room? First it used to be outhouse, now it is inside the house. And it's right next to the kitchen. That's the new design. But anyway, the point is, can you make the bathroom a fully functional place of living and enjoyment in the house? No. Even if you add a few things to it to make it look nice, still, it's a place where one is to relieve oneself, clean oneself, and get out. So Prabhupada explains the material world is like that. It's the bathroom. There's a specific function. You do your job and you get out. You don't make it a place of comfort and permanent residency. So what is the meaning of making this world a better place? Narada Muni is explaining to King Prachina Barhi that many people try to make their life better because they want to counteract misery. And they want to replace the misery with something comfortable. Something nice for the senses and the mind. And they try and try and try. And whatever they try, the solution that they come up with is also another form of misery. Tomorrow's verse is a very beautiful verse. I mean, not tomorrow, I think Monday morning. It's a very nice verse. Narada Muni gives like a visual to the kind of problems the kind of solutions we pick up for our problems. I want to take a pause and clarify something. So we've been having this seminar for young men. And I believe one of the impressions that is being carried is that we are encouraging all of our young men to not pursue careers, to not pursue marriage, but become saffron-clad brahmacharis. And to do that, we are poo-pooing grahastashram. That's the impression I believe that may have settled. And I want to say that that is not the case. I'm going officially on record, on camera, Facebook, YouTube, everywhere, that is not what we are talking about. We are not deciding for you men what ashram you should be taking. That is your decision. What we are imploring is that whatever stage of life that you're going to get into, do not get into it unprepared. Do not get into it without training in the principles of proper Krishna consciousness, without training in proper brahmacharya principles. The word brahmacharya should not necessarily mean unmarried throughout life. It does not mean that. Prabhupada explained that my grahasthas are also brahmacharis. Because that's how they live. They live according to the principles of spiritual cultivation, regardless of ashram. So I want to make it very, very clear. Very clear. I'll say it again if you like. That we are not deciding what ashram you should take. nor are we sending subliminal messages about, hey, Brahmacharya Ashram. You know, although we say something in the lecture, but everywhere, you know, we're hanging saffron cloth just so that, you know, it works in a subliminal manner. No, that's not the case either. That's your decision. That is according to your nature, what you want to do. But yes, something that we are very emphatic about is do not enter any stage of life without proper preparation. And the preparation that any one of us, well, for me it's a little too late, but for any one of you, without proper training in how to be a strong young man in Krishna consciousness or strong young woman in Krishna consciousness, marriage would be highly risky. Highly risky doesn't mean that you're going to throw things at each other and yell expletives and say, oh, what is this? You should be my servant. I'll show you Devahuti's story. And, oh, no, no, I will show you Kardama Muni's character. Just look at him. Look at Kardama Muni's picture and look at yourself. What it means is, you know, the interesting thing is, without proper training, a husband and wife may be very nice with each other. That is also risky. Understand my point? Without the principles of Krishna consciousness as the medium of exchange between the husband and wife. There are many marriages out there of people who are not devotees, and they're celebrating their 50th anniversary, 40th anniversary. They have great marriages. They have wonderful children. We're not looking for that. We're looking for good marriages as devotees, where Krishna is the center of our relationships. That's why. And to that end, proper preparation is necessary. Okay, I said it like 4 times. That's what we're trying to do. In this purport, I'm going to connect to that theme. Generally, the reason people find a job, try to make a career, a nice house, family portraits, all of that is the pursuit of wanting to be happy. It is a way of mitigating miseries. Because in this modern context, the way we have come to understand that the solution to miseries is economic development. And outside we do see some semblances of it, that those who have money seem to be doing better off in their lives, and those who don't have money, they're struggling. In America, it's not so clear, although we can, to some degree, get some idea. But if you go to, let's say, India, then the difference is quite stark. There are beggars on the street, and they'll nag you for a little money. And then there are persons sitting in, you know, very big luxury cars, and the divide is very clear. So people generally have the understanding that if you have economic development, you have money, then you can become happy. And the way to get to economic development is through a job. And the better paying the job is, the prospects of being more happy are higher. So that is why there is educational institutions, there is so much career prospects, negotiation on money and perks and benefits. And people work very hard to achieve those things. Like Prabhupada's writing. Actually, we can see in our daily lives how we are forced to make plans to drive away miserable conditions. Because it's ingrained. It's ingrained in the lifestyle model that we are living, that if there is economic development, then there is easier access to happiness.
This is not the Vedic model. Another aspect of the modern model is each person has to struggle very hard for his own happiness. The Vedic model is not like that. The Vedic model is a shared economy, as they say. One ashram works and other ashrams are taken care of. Because there is a sense of shared economy. The grihasthas work and the other ashrams are benefited. There is charity as a main principle. And it's not just giving, the grihasthas receive. The grihasthas receive service from brahmacharis. They receive a fantastic example from vanaprasthas. And they receive instruction in spiritual life from the sannyasis. So it's a shared economy in such that the economic development aspect is taken care of by the grihasthas and the spiritual development aspect is taken care of by the other ashrams. And each grihastha is responsible for his or her own spiritual development as well. But we share with each other. But in this case, nowadays, everyone is working very hard for himself. Another aspect is not just shared across ashrams, but shared within an ashram. One grihastha assists another grihastha. They used to have communities. A village would always help each other. Within a village, they would help each other by inviting each other for prasadam. So that day you don't have to cook. Someone else is cooking for you. Someone else would invite. And they would have Krishna Katha. So each person would go to different houses and they don't have to cook in their own house. They don't have to worry about, I don't have money for groceries. And when they didn't have money for grocery, all they had to do is walk up to the neighbor and say, today we are short of this. Oh, please take. It's a shared economy. But that shared economy has gone away. We're very, very centered around single unit families. And in that single unit means very, very nuclear families. Husband, wife, maybe a child. And then they have to think all about themselves. So then they have to work very hard to maintain themselves. And Prabhupada gives an example of poor man suffers for want of money, and the way he counteracts it is that he has to struggle very hard to become rich. And then Prabhupada says, actually, this is not a correct method of counteracting misery. It is but the snare of the illusory potency. Pursuing economic development means pursuing the illusion that Maya has put out by telling us, this way you'll become better. Life will be so much nicer. So the approach Narada Muni is recommending is tasyaiva heto prayateta kovida. If one is intelligent, philosophically inclined, he says, then one should understand that by my trying something very hard to mitigate my misery, or trying very hard to make my situation better, may not work for me. Because misery and happiness come on their own accord or of their own accord. It's not by my trying. Otherwise it should mean that everybody who has money is very happy and is blissful, which is not the case. It would also mean that everybody who's not rich must be miserable, which is not the case either. So if monetary wealth or monetary assets do not decide happiness and distress, then why is everyone pursuing that? One is pursuing that because it may be intellectually or philosophically existing somewhere, but it's not realization. And until it becomes realization, one will continue. Till one comes to a point where it says, all of this misery. Why am I doing all this? That realization comes out of frustration. And we don't lead our lives simply out of frustration. We don't have to wait for frustration to come before we decide, oh, Narada Muni was right. So, going back to preparing ahead of time, this is our preparation. I may be embarking upon a career. I may be embarking upon another phase of life. But the purpose with which I do those should be different. It should not be this purpose, as King Parachina Barhi and other conditioned souls are doing. Oh, my economic situation should be better. My comfort in life should be better. If I don't have money, then I'll be in a really bad condition in society. That's not the reason. That is not the reason for pursuing a career or whichever ashram. Especially grihastha ashram, because in grihastha ashram there is the concession of pursuing economic development. The purpose for getting into that ashram should be very clear, that the purpose is atma samshuddhi, for purification of the self. Now self becomes purified by the process of sacrifice. So we are performing Harinam Sankirtan in this Kali Yuga. So for working professionals, the Harinam Sankirtan process works like this. There is a purpose for entering the work environment. The purpose is that I don't have the full realization that I can just hear and chant and Krishna will fully take care of me. I need to engage my senses and capacities and assets, intellectual, mental assets, in a particular manner. I need that engagement because I have certain things to offer Krishna. So let me do it simply for the purpose of offering it to Krishna, not for any other purpose. And whatever credit that comes from it, credit that comes as appreciation, accolades, money, that rightfully belongs to Krishna. That because Krishna is the source of everything. Krishna is allowing me to utilize my intellectual capacity in things that seemingly are not spiritual. But it's a way for me to remember Krishna. It is a way for me to remember the source from where everything is coming. Whether it is engineering, physics, medicine, whatever, these are all working by the laws of nature that Krishna created. So regardless of what we are doing, the source is still Krishna. Mathematics, whatever it is, whatever field of education or career or work it might be, the source is Krishna. And I'm appreciating the beauty of Krishna's intelligence. And I'm appreciating how Krishna is empowering me to appreciate that. Therefore, whatever comes from it belongs to Krishna. That's my way of purifying my mind and senses in a work environment. And another aspect is by my being there in the work environment, let's say, or a school environment, I am a tiny ambassador of Krishna. Oh, I'm not qualified. Yes, we're not qualified. But we are, each one of us, as devotees of Krishna, the purpose of being in such an environment is to be an ambassador of Krishna. And so, people will be attracted to us by our qualities, by our behavior, by our, we'll call it work ethics, if you like. There are many persons who have good work ethics. But we're not looking for that. We're looking for us to be devotees that other people can contact and get little drops of Krishna consciousness from us. We are mediums, we're instruments. That is why we are there in the workplace. If these two purposes are not clear, then the reason for being in our workplace, school, needs to be readjusted. Or I like the word recalibrated. So for the first purpose is for our purification. The second purpose is to allow purification for others. So things such as prasadam distribution, etc. These are ways of contacting others, or others contacting Krishna. That's the purpose of that ashram, and that's the purpose of being in such an environment. For a person who does not want to serve Krishna in that way, or that's not the call, that's not their nature, then there are other ashrams by which they can serve Krishna. Both are a service to Krishna. If this is not clear, then one will fall into this trap. This trap of, oh, I need to mitigate my miseries. Therefore, I need money. Therefore, I need to work. I need to have the comforts of life. I need to adjust this situation. I need to adjust that situation. Same for brahmacharis. Over-endeavoring to change or modify material circumstances leads to more misery. This is true for anyone. Our purpose is not in expending all our energies trying to fix the circumstances that we are in. Our endeavor is to expend all our energies in fixing our heart so that these circumstances don't bother us anymore. And fixing our heart, here Prabhupada gives us the sentence, however, if we endeavor to improve our Krishna consciousness, the distress of material life will disappear without extraneous endeavor. Poof, gone away. As long as we are working on our own Krishna consciousness, improving our own Krishna consciousness. We are doing this seminar for men, and one of the things we shared was a quality of honesty. And it's applicable here. We said honesty is not just speaking the truth. Real honesty is to always come back to this understanding that the source of my trouble is here, not out there, not that person. That's the point being made here. That's the verse as well. The living entities are trying to counteract different miserable conditions. The conditions seem to manifest out there. Pertaining to providence, this is called Adi Daivika Klesha. Other living entities, Adi Bhautika, or the body and mind, Adhyatmika Kleshas. And as long as one tries to fix things externally, one will not be happy. The fixing has to happen internally. Prabhupada says improving our Krishna consciousness. So the topic of honesty was, that whatever is the situation there, the first place to look at, the first place to work on is our consciousness. Because if a pure saint, Vaishnava, Uttam Adhikari would come to that situation, they would say, what's wrong? Everything is all right. I need to fix something for myself. So Narada Muni, Srila Prabhupada are helping us understand in a very truthful, honest manner that the problem lies here. And the solution also lies here, improvement of our own Krishna consciousness. And there is a guarantee, in case we are worried, oh, what about the circumstances, what about this? There is a guarantee. Do not worry. Krishna is promising, Name Bhakta Pranashyati. My devotee shall never be vanquished. Vanquished means one will never be punished by or influenced by the material energy. Oh, what if? No what ifs. Krishna will take care. Krishna is guaranteeing, I will take care. So our improvement of Krishna consciousness is to develop that conviction that if I serve Krishna, if my whole thought process is how to improve my service to Krishna in my study, in my work, in my sadhana, in my activities, in my services, Krishna will take care of everything else. No other adjustment is necessary. That's Narada Muni's instruction. Any questions or comments? Jai Jagannath Prabhu, Richard Prabhu. Right. Yeah, they do not, yeah. Correct. Right. Well, there are two ways of learning. One way of learning is taking admission in the school of hard knocks and learning it that way. Or there's no guarantee one might not learn that way. Because all these lifetimes we haven't learned it. Another way of learning it is by hearing from those who are philosophically inclined. Prabhupada is giving us. And our hearing is not just once in a while, once a year, or twice a year, or three times a year, but our hearing is every day. Every day when we take association of acharyas, then our philosophical inclination awakens. If we don't contact personalities like Srila Prabhupada, then it will not awaken. Then we'll be like what's called, the ducks in water. They never get wet. I never knew that. It seems ducks never get wet. Yeah, they can dip their head into water, come out really dry. So our consciousness is also like that. I mean, it's like a duck, quack, quack. And it just does not get wet by all the mercy that's being given. You know, quack, quack. That's about it. Quack also means charlatan, right? Especially in medical field. So we have to, you know, the back of Bhagavad Gita, I mean, Thoreau is not an acharya for us, but his words are nice appreciation of the Bhagavad Gita. I think it's Thoreau who says, every morning I bathe my intellect in the stupendous words of Bhagavad Gita or something like that. It's the bathing of intellect actually means that my consciousness, like the morning translation of Guru Puja, let my consciousness be completely purified by the words emanating from the lotus mouth of my spiritual master. That is how our philosophical awakening happens. There is no other way. It's not like we were talking the other day. It's not like suddenly lightning has to strike us. Ah, now I'm philosophically inclined. It doesn't work like that. It never works like that. So it is up to us, each one of us, how much we want to extract from the spiritual master or acharyas. Yesterday you used the verse, dharma satatvam nihitam guhayam. There are all these wonderful jewels in these caves. That's the heart of the great personalities. And we're all on this treasure hunt. The more inspired we are, the more committed we are to find that treasure, we will find that treasure. If you try a little bit and say, oh, it's no, then we won't get it. It's up to us. Richard Prabhu?
Srila Prabhupada talks about...
Where?
I think it's in the third canto. Anyway, he talks about taking a burden from a shoulder, placing it on the head, and then it relates to what you were talking about today.
It's not in the third canto. It's in the fourth canto, 29th chapter, and guess what? Text 33.
Is the next one up?
Next one up.
Oh, wow. Very well.
A man may carry a burden on his head, and when he feels it to be too heavy, he sometimes gives relief to his head by putting the burden on his shoulder. In this way, he tries to relieve himself of the burden. However, whatever process he devises to counteract the burden does nothing more than put the same burden from one place to another.
Yeah. And I've been pondering this ever since I read it.
Okay.
Anyway, my question is, and I can save it till tomorrow also, but when someone has something that is outside of hearing and chanting, that seems like it's actually getting in the way of hearing and chanting, a physical disease, for instance, what does one do?
Even when there is physical disease, hearing and chanting may solve that problem, but depends on one's full conviction upon how hearing and chanting can solve that problem. For most of us, we don't have that. So what is necessary is take a little medicine and move on. In the case of Jagannath Das Babaji, he used to chant in Navadvip and he had a servant, assistant, Bihari Lal. One time Bihari Lal was severely ill with fever. His body was hot and shivering. And Jagannath Das Babaji told him, "Don't worry, chant Hare Krishna." Placed a leaf of tulsi on his tongue and said, "You'll be fine. Chant Hare Krishna." And he had that conviction. He chanted. Within 24 hours, fever vanished. We may not have that conviction. So for us, there is medicine. However, there is a verse in the Bhagavatam that we should remember that medicine will work on us when there is a particular feature of Krishna's mercy acting. Just as a father or mother cannot save their child from any condition, just as medicine cannot cure a disease, really. Otherwise, all medicines should cure all diseases. But there are tons of medicines and tons of researchers, and then there is tons of diseased persons. In number, how many of them? So it's not necessary that medicine shall always cure disease. And he says that even if one is drowning, a boat by itself cannot save a person unless there is Krishna's mercy. Specifically, it's Lord Narasimha, prayer to Lord Narasimhadev. So when we take medicine or when we fix a situation, our consciousness is not, "Let me fix this so my problems will go away." Our consciousness is, "My dear Krishna, under guidance, if I take care of this situation, my goal is that my hearing and chanting should continue unimpeded. If you so desire, please let this manifest. If you want me to learn something from this disease or that situation, then let that manifest." Not all miserable situations or miseries are meant for punishing us. They're meant for teaching us. So whatever is the Krishna, what is your goal in this? Let me understand that, not just fix the situation. Yeah.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
One time in book distribution, This is a question.
Oh.
One time in book distribution, I was explaining, these books are on meditation and yoga, they help relieve stress. And then pretty soon after that, the person I was talking to said, "Well, sometimes stress is a good thing." You know, it's like I think in psychology they call it distress and eustress, a kind of stress. Eustress means it's like a motivating thing. So in the materialistic paradigm, this anxiety or this stress that goes along with worrying about suffering, at least it helps us get things done, do work. So I'm wondering what place that kind of thing has in spiritual life, if there is a similar kind of anxiety that is progressive up to a certain point. Like we hear of like real spiritual anxiety, that's a very elevated thing. So I was just hoping to hear more on this topic.
Distress comes from mode of ignorance. Eustress comes from mode of passion. Because mode of passion, stress that is feeding a person is the mode of passion. That's why people do what they do. Because it gives them a, hey, yeah, I like challenges. It's the mode of passion. And because pure devotional service operates on spiritual energy or spiritual platform, we don't have these kinds of stresses. What the devotee has, pure devotee has, is a different form of anxiety, let's put it that way. Now, that anxiety is not a feature of the material realm, because that anxiety is centered around Krishna. In the material realm, our anxiety is centered around ourselves. My situation, my family, my country, like that. It's still me-centered. Therefore, it's passion. And some people just don't get stressed. Even if their life is going to the dumps, they don't get stressed because that's more of ignorance. Oh, okay, whatever. So the transcendental anxiety is because for Krishna. Has Krishna eaten? Is the environment comfortable for Krishna? What about all the souls who are suffering there? What about them? How can we inspire them for the relationship with Krishna? Like that. There is a play. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita. This young cowherd boy, he shows up in Vrindavan. And he is hearing that Vrindavan is this ecstatic place. But when he comes to Vrindavan, he looks at Mother Yashoda and the gopis, and they're all sitting there lifeless. Like, just sitting there lifeless. So he wonders, what's going on? So someone taps him on his shoulder and says, they're all in severe anxiety. And because they cannot see Krishna, he has gone to take care of the cows and calves. They've taken them for grazing. So until Krishna returns from the pasturing grounds, these people are going to be like this. And some time passes and suddenly they see these dust clouds. And as soon as they see the dust clouds, all these personalities, they're suddenly in this high, ecstatic phase. And they're running about, moving about, very anxiously trying to put things together. Why? Because that's the first sign that Krishna is returning. They don't even see Krishna. It's just the sign that Krishna is perhaps returning. And they're completely feeling jubilated. And Mother Yashoda is now thinking, I don't know if he had lunch. I usually pack his lunch, but you know, he shares it away. He eats someone else's lunch. I hope he has had his lunch. I hope everything's okay. The house is ready for him. He's going to come in. He's going to say, I'm hungry. Is everything... There's anxiety. That anxiety is of a different quality. We shouldn't get mixed up with the guru is coming, let me fix the house because my guru is coming. We're fixing the house because the guru will say, well, how are you living in a terrible condition? One time there was a spiritual master who was very expert, because all spiritual masters are expert because they say daksha, but the spiritual master went to a devotee's house, and the house was all nicely organized. And said, "Oh," they said, "can I have some water or something?" So the happy disciple ran into the kitchen. So Guru went and opened a shelf, and everything fell out of the shelf because they had stuffed everything in, nicely closed it. So then nothing externally, everything appears nicely. So he just wanted to check, and he opened one shelf, and whole thing fell down. That anxiety is not Krishna-centered, necessarily. But we can also experience little specks of it here and there. Yes, there is place for anxiety, there is place for... I don't want to use the word stress because it has a negative connotation. Definitely in serving Krishna. Festivals are coming up, there's a sense of anxiety. How are we going to put this festival together? Although we have enough experience that regardless, Krishna takes care of the festivals. He's the doer. But he likes to give us the anxiety so that at least our thoughts are absorbed in serving him. We don't say, for the past 10 years you've been taking care of Janmashtami. This year also you take care. So what? Anyway, he's going to take care. But that's not our mood. Okay. We'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. For the temple